welcome to That's What I'm Talking About, the show that I ended 5 months ago to do a Star Wars podcast, and then some strikes happened, so I came back to do That's What I'm Talking About, and then the week that I came back, the WGA strike was successfully resolved, and now it looks like that the SAG-AFTRA strike is going to be resolved soon, but I'm still doing these episodes anyway. Joining me today is Allie Gordon. Welcome.
Hi. Congratulations. Go labor unions.
It's yes. Yeah. First, that sounds really bitter. It's not me being bitter at all, because ultimately we do want them to have, you know, to get the rights and the pay and everything that they completely deserve. It was just slightly frustrating that it all happened. That the moment I made a decision to like come back to That's What I'm Talking About, when I was like, well, I guess these strikes aren't ending anytime soon. And then literally the week I released the first one of these episodes, the WGA strike ended.
It's because of you.
It's because of me.
They were like, first it was Drew Barrymore. That was a big one. And then it was you.
They were waiting for me. They're like, we're going to wait for that dumb girl
to completely
give up on Star Wars. And
exactly.
then they're like,
that'll really make her embarrassed. And now here we are. That's great.
And also, we're recording this. I'm getting very ahead of schedule because I'm only releasing these every other week. And this will come out, I think, early November. So probably by the time this is out, the SAG-AFTRA strike will be over, hopefully.
What the ear to the ground, the rumblings are, sometime in the next, like, 3 weeks. So hopefully.
Alex, I'll take statements that have aged like milk for 1,000, please. Yeah, I'm just going to stop trying to make any kind of predictions about the strike, and we'll just leave it at that.
Yes. Yeah, we'll Hopefully. Keep our fingers crossed. But in the meantime, I will be here giving you Middle Earth history while inebriated. Allie, how have you been since the last time you've been on? Neither of us are currently at the Lord of the Rings musical, so that's slightly depressing. But
have you also felt that they've made it difficult to access pictures or information or any sort of footage about it?
I guess they really want it. I've seen like some Instagram posts, I guess, from the company or the location that it's being hosted at, but all of it is like very like, you know, professional. And yeah, I guess they want people to like come in with as many like blind expectations and
be fully immersive. A video that we both really enjoyed Now and For Always, but even in the doing of the video, it's sort of filmed like in a studio setting. And they're playing instruments and they sound fantastic, but it's really hard to tell, like, are those costumes from the show or are those costumes for the promo?
It was like recorded specifically for the purpose of like putting it out online.
Right. So like, it's really hard to tell, like, in the show, do they wear little feet or like, are they just humans? And we just sort of use the magic of theater to be like, yes.
They're hobbits.
That's a hobbit. I see that with my eyes in my mind's eye. The brains of my mind eye.
Yeah.
I'm saying just words, just salad. I was really trying to do some stalking and just like see if I could see some numbers. Like, what I really want to know is like, are they committing to trying to like manufacture like some low key stage magic, or are they straight up just being like, you know, when two people bring out a big sheet and a baking pan and they shake it and it's like, oh, thunder. Because it could be either. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I can't tell.
It could be, yeah, like the way the venue and everything is constructed and how like some of it is outside, and it could very well be like a mixture of like low budget, you know, theater effects and stuff, and like combined with that like suspension of disbelief and being like, we're in the Shire, even though it's like, no, like I have my phone in my pocket, you know, whatever.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know, but I really wanted to know. They've made it very difficult. Sometimes when people do that, or like when theater companies do that, it's because they know that they have a bigger venue lined up or something next, and they're just like, I guess you'll have to see.
That's kind of what I was thinking. I was like, well, hopefully, because I think definitely by the time this episode comes out, but maybe even by the time we're recording this, I think the show run is ending or will be ending soon.
Yeah, soon.
And so I wonder if this will open up, because they've brought it like back to life, so to speak. I wonder if it'll open up the opportunity for other theaters and other places right. to do this.
Or for this company to do like a West End transfer or something like that.
Yeah.
Although, and sometimes when people are really low-key about it, of just being like, gosh, I wish I could show you videos from our amazing production that's getting amazing reviews. It's usually because some producer has been like, don't share anything. We're going to like take this to a bigger thing.
Or well, I don't know how it could be taken to... Because it sounds like it's such an this just turned into the like Lord of the Rings musical like part three.
I honestly wouldn't care with that. If we want to do a hard pivot today, I'm so all about it.
what I've been meaning to do is meaning to reach out to one of the Lang brothers because I know they did a Lord of the Rings or Hobbit musical. Yes. Like before even Potter.
Yes, it was. It was before I even got to school. It was like the year before I got to school. It's
yo, can you imagine if you had been in that?
No. I also was like, I would have been like a baby freshman and would have just been like so completely and totally mystified by how people could be so funny and so like free with themselves. Because like, you know, when you're a freshman in theater school, you're like, you show up and you're like, I'm talented. And then about 2 weeks later, you're like, am I talented?
Your talents far surpass anything required for a Lord of the Rings musical. I think
now I don't know if that's true. First of all, here we have a full we have a full season of this Amazon TV show, and I didn't even get to like poke my head out of a window as a what's it called? They're not called hobbits, they're called what are they called?
Harfoots.
Do you know what I'm saying? I didn't even get one little feature where I got to just be like, you crazy kids. Like, that's, I mean, like, if that's not what I was born, if that's not what I was put on my earth, this earth to do. I don't know what, I'm here for.
Yeah. So I guess it just remains to be seen what will happen with this musical and whether or not. But I mean, I feel like they can't transfer it to the West End because it's so, this production specifically was all about like immersion and being outdoors. And like, you can't reproduce something like that in a mega theater, you know?
True. So, although I will say when Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet was first in New York, it wasn't a big tent, like a circus tent. And it was not in a Broadway theater. So it was a nice tent. It was like a professional tent that I think had some semblance of like HVAC-y control for air and things, and like it had like, you know, sides that closed and everything, but it was technically an outdoor theater that had been made into a theater space. So maybe they'll do something like that. I mean it'd be really cool if they could do a thing that had like a ceiling that either, you know, when you go to like a nice restaurant and they've got like a retractable ceiling space outdoors, so if it's really nice weather, like this, like,
I can honestly open. Say I've never been to a restaurant with a retractable ceiling.
Well, it's like an outdoor space, like a what's the word I'm looking for? I was gonna say a shed, not a shed, but like, you know, when you go out to the nice outdoor area, and if it's nice, it's like the wind, it's like all
they have
open.
Like the screens up it or something,
but then like there's like a thing that can cover up over you if it's bad weather, and still be outside. Like maybe they'll do that. I don't know.
Well, I'd really like them to bring it to, I feel like Washington, D.C. is a good middle ground, I think, between where you and I are.
Oh, I was wondering why you said that. And I like that the production's going to choose where to come to America because it'll be equidistant between us. And because I was like, gee, I wonder why
technically
Washington, D.C. likes this.
Technically, that is much closer to me than it is to you.
No, that's fine. That's a train right away.
But I feel like if you're going to bring it to like some kind of major city, well, because also they're doing a Spamalot revival. We're really going down the rabbit hole now.
Really soon.
And that was at the, they did that at the Kennedy Center. Was that in, and that was in DC, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm making sure I have my geography correct. So I feel like they should bring it to DC next and then open it up on Broadway and then hire us both as, I don't know, permanent stage
watchers.
Managers or ushers or something.
Exactly. Yeah, that's great. I think they should hire us as like hype team. Has anyone talked about this musical more in depth? Yeah, like, well, as I already said before this started recording, I have a mic stand, but I don't have it right now because I'm using it for another project. So I'm just holding my mic, sort of like an Instagram influencer on the street. So I feel like I'm ready.
Yeah, I think we're both ready. We'll do whatever it takes to, yeah. Oh my God. So when I reached out to you about this concept, you were like, that's so silly and fun. I would love to do that. And I said, I asked you, like, what would you be excited to talk about, or what do you want to talk about under this context? And you wanted to talk about, like, family trees, and specifically you called out Bilbos.
Yeah, I always feel like the thing that, I mean, there's obviously a lot of nuance between books and movies that mm-hmm. changes or gets lost. But I feel like one of the primary things that is, like, very important in the books that is, like, not as important in the movies is, like, who's related to who, how, by what lineage.
Yeah.
What, when, and where. Like, and I feel like so many pages of the book are dedicated to that. And I feel like in the movie they're
so many.
Yeah, like in the movie they're like, that's his uncle. And like at no point is anybody ever like, that's actually not his uncle. Like it's there's like just
second cousin three times removed or whatever.
But, like,
yeah.
In the books it's like wink. You know what I mean? Like I feel like every other page, like Tolkien's being like, and his uncle, wink, said this. Like, you know, it's all about family trees in the book.
Because which is so silly, because Tolkien, he created this and he literally could have just made it be that Bilbo is Frodo's uncle. Like there was nothing stopping him.
Yes, he's like, as if he's reporting it. And he's like, I regret to inform you that I must report this accurately. And he's actually and a second cousin.
It's like no one is making you make, like there's literally no consequence of Frodo being Bilbo's nephew versus second cousin.
There's no consequence. Yeah. Actually, I feel like this naturally segs us into an important piece of information that I did do some
research
on.
Please. So I picked one family tree that we might get into, and I asked Allie if she wanted to lead a conversation about Bilbo.
I hope that I'm accurately prepared.
You're going to do great. You're going to do excellent.
But what I really wanted to know, this was the piece of investigative. This is the serial podcast that I'm making.
I'm Sarah Koenig.
Yeah, I'm Sarah Koenig. And Male crimp is I love it. We're making jokes that are like 7 years late, but I still think it's funny. So
I don't really
care.
Come at me.
Cereal. So here's my serial investigative podcast. I'll even put on my Sarah Koenig voice. Whose fault is it that we think that Bilbo is Frodo's uncle? Who brought that to the book? Who was the first person to say that? Is it a collective hallucination? Or did somebody, or did someone in specific, actively lead us to believe this? And the answer is yes. I was like, okay, why do we think that? And the answer is that in one of the first couple chapters of Lord of the Rings, when Frodo meets Gandalf for the first time, he says, you don't think I would miss your Uncle Bilbo's birthday. I think it's Gandalf's fault.
Blame Gandalf. I like that.
He's the one who showed up in town. He's the one who says uncle.
He can't be bothered to like know the ins and outs of the like delicate, you know.
Yeah, maybe he was oversimplifying.
Family histories, yeah.
And so he was like, yeah, uncle. So I think.
Or was it something that Bilbo didn't feel like fully explaining to Gandalf and was just like, yeah, I'm his uncle?
Yes, completely. I mean, that to me in the fiction of this relationship, they like meet every so often or just get like blackout wasted in smoke. And at some point, Gandalf came back and was like, so you have a kid now. And he's like, well, I mean, it's kind of complicated. I'm just like kind of like his uncle. And Gandalf was like, I see. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, that's the fiction that I have created in my mind. But yeah, in the book specifically, it's the line of text says that Bilbo had no close friends until some of his younger cousins began to grow up. The eldest of these and Bilbo's favorite was young Frodo Baggins. So straight out of the gate, Tolkien's like, cousin, cousin, cousin. I need you to understand that. Sounds like Gandalf's the guy who kind of got in there and made it messy.
I mean, that is accurate for Gandalf's personality.
Yeah, completely. Do we think that Gandalf sees their relationships as being like cute in the way that like when a little kid says they have a best friend, you're like, sure, sweetheart. Do you know what I mean? Like he's like, you're all going to die in about 10 minutes. You mean nothing to me. And they're like, that's my cousin. And he's like, what cousin, uncle, whatever. It's a sure. Sure, baby.
So the question is, does he view Frodo and Bilbo's relationship, or is it his relationship with Bilbo?
No, I'm saying does he view all of these other creatures that are not semi-eternal beings of light?
Right.
As sort of like when your friend is like, our dogs are best friends. And you're like, yeah, sure. In so they much don't... as dogs can have friends.
Exactly, like, yeah. Like when, it's like thinks? When, you know, two people bring their babies together and one's a boy and one's a girl. And
yes,
it's like, oh.
Yes, like, oh my God, they're gonna, already flirting.
They're flirting. Yeah. And it's like, they cannot hold up their head. Like,
exactly.
They don't. They can't see all the colors yet. Like,
so maybe.
I think Gandalf is more compassionate of a person than that. I feel like maybe some of the elves or some of the or like Saruman maybe would view it that way. But yeah, I feel like Gandalf is more, he values that like personal connection a lot more. And maybe that's why he says uncle. Because he knows that, like, they're closer than, it's not just that they're cousins or it's not just that they're second cousins. It's that Bilbo has been in a father figure role for Frodo and taking care of Frodo, but he's not his father.
So we might as well just call him uncle.
Might as well just call him uncle. Yeah,
maybe. Again, this is not based on fact in any way, shape, or form. This is just sort of the fiction of my own mind. But like when you were saying, like, I do feel like some of the elves might feel that way. I feel like Elrond is the kind of elf who, like, if like Merry or Pippin gave him a hug, he'd be like, oh, okay, run along now. And then he'd like turn to his friend and be like, wash these robes. Do you know what I'm saying?
Like, it's, I mean, but accurate.
But like that feels real to me. Where he'd be like, burn these.
Yeah, I think, whereas I think Galadriel would be like, oh, that's sweet. Like, the little kids came up and gave me a hug.
Exactly, exactly. Like,
they got a little bit of peanut butter on my beautiful robe.
My big white dress.
But that's okay. It can be, okay. You know, it'll come out. It's a, you know, it'll be washed. It's fine.
Yes.
Elrond would immediately be like,
burn these. Get me new ones. I'm done with these.
Get me new robes immediately.
And like, not in like a hateful way, but just, like, he's just like, no, I don't trust anywhere that you have been.
I have
so
lots
much so
of
that we need to start over.
Yeah, I just have thoughts and feelings about the elves in general. Just, I don't want to like put too much. I don't even know if this is praise about my experience of reading The Silmarillion, because like, I cannot emphasize to you enough how much I did not need to read The Silmarillion.
Or how much you seem to just truly not like being there. So
I didn't like it at all. I guess some parts of it were fine. But like, the hindsight I've gained or whatever, like the knowledge I've gained from it, it definitely like casts a different light on the elves, where I'm just like, damn, they messy. They are not like these like beautiful, perfect beings that like they're portrayed to be in Lord of the Rings. And like, not to get like too much into the struck work, which hopefully won't be struck by the time this comes out.
Yes, exactly.
That like, specifically I'm thinking of the scenes where they're like in lines and they're holding the lanterns in front of them and they're completely. Like walk and the angelic music is playing underneath them and they're just not that at all. And I feel like they're just a lot more, maybe not Elrond. Maybe we should give him more credit because he's been there for a while. He's seen some shit.
I feel like what this is leading to is sort of a Real Housewives style TV show of sort of like the secret life of these messy elves. Because, you know, are you a Housewives person? Do you watch any of those franchises?
I'm not, but the way that more and more people... So Housewives franchise, whatever, has always been something that I'm like, oh yeah, adult, like grown-ups watch that.
Whereas I feel when I watch it that I am a child. So I have a totally different perspective.
So I guess I've gotten to an age where like people my age watch these shows. And like, more and more people I know watch these shows and I'm like, should I get into it? Because I will say, I'll tell myself that I followed Dance Moms.
I followed Dance Moms for such a long time.
I watched it from like, I want to say like the first or second season when they were like, it was before Kendall came in.
I definitely watched before Kendall. Absolutely.
And so
before
I guess
JoJo,
that was the first
before
season.
JoJo Siwa,
before
oh
JoJo.
Yeah.
And I watched every, like, I was in college pirating these new episodes that were coming out on a weekly basis 100%. To keep up with Dance Moms. I could not get it. And my friends and I, we'd talk about, be like, oh my God, can you believe what Holly said? What a savage comment. That was amazing. And like, I cannot believe that Christy still thinks that blah, blah, blah. Like,
yeah, it's like they're delusional if she thinks she's getting that so low.
And Abby, how dare she put Nia that low on the pyramid when she brought in. Yeah, there
was a disrespect though. And that's factual, I feel. But regardless, I watch quite a few franchises, and including some ones that are new, like I've been there from the ground up, like Potomac or Salt Lake City. And they always introduce these people. And for the most part, you're like, huh, maybe this cast are going to be like the normal ones. Maybe their lives are kind of good. And I don't know why, like a baby, you jingle keys in front of my face and I'm fooled every time. They have a new cast of New York. New York was like one of the first franchises and they just like rebooted it with a whole new cast. And when this started 11 episodes ago, I was like, maybe they're the normal ones. Maybe they're the ones whose lives I wish I had. And of course, 11 episodes in, you're like, oh, you all are cuckoo. And you've all got problems and you all don't act like human beings on this planet. And that's what I feel is like the elves. To circle back to your point, where you just like, you see them in a line with angelic music and you're like, yeah, maybe you would be awesome.
That's just what they're showing guys. For the cameras.
Yes. Yeah. And then 11 episodes like in, you're scenes. Like, oh, no, no, no.
Well, I feel like by the time we see them in Lord of the Rings, they've had centuries
to
mellow out, you know?
And yet they still have drama.
But earlier lives, especially with Feanor, I think that was the episode before this one was about Feanor, who is the messiest of all the elves. Actually, no, I take that back. Yes, that's correct. Sorry, I'm getting my elves and my men mixed up. I was about to say Turin Turimbar, who was just like this like tragic figure where like everything bad happened to him. And a lot of it was kind of like his own doing, but that's a different, like his own attitude of being like, I'm cursed and doomed to, and it's like, bro, just like.
You're manifesting, bro. Bro, stop manifesting.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I would for sure watch real
elf wives.
Real
house elves. I feel like
is a different franchise.
Now, hold on. I do feel we maybe have just inadvertently stumbled into the real Entwives.
The real, oh!
Where are they at? Filming a TV show. I think we have an answer.
So much. God, if I only had the resource, if I only had an entire studio and technology and money and actors at my disposal.
Right. And so much green screen and so much special effects and perhaps miniatures.
And like artists. Effects and stuff. Like, oh, man. That would be so great. That is really fun, though. The real Entwives of Middle-earth.
The Entwives left us long ago. It's like, yeah, well, they have a contract. They have a season to finish. And they talk really slowly. So it's going to take a long time for one season to get filmed.
I'm turning this into a meme. I hope you are aware of that. I will fully credit you. But
all I
will
want
make
is for
a real
people
Entwives
to just make it real for me. It's so good. And that was totally, we like backed into that by mistake. But wow, what a fun one.
Okay, so Bilbo, so how is he actually related to Frodo?
He is his second cousin. I feel like if I just like say how everyone's related, that's not very fun. So I'll just give like first just like what I got from the Middle Earth Wiki, which is basically the Baggins family, prominent Hobbit family. Its first members were Barilla Boffin and Balbo Baggins, and they had at least 7 generations of Baggins families. It was a paternal family of Bilbo and Frodo Baggins, so they are related on their father's side.
Okay.
It was founded by Balbo and Barilla by having 5 children. They all have increasingly... What's fun about this family tree is that the names are either absolutely wild or so normal. It's really fun.
I was hoping some of them would be silly.
Because in the beginning, here are some early Bagginses. Balbo was the first known recorded member of the Baggins family. He's married to Barilla. Then we've got Mungo, who's the firstborn son. Mungo had kids. Bungo, Belbo, Longo, Linda, Linda, and Bingo.
Linda!
So funny. Like, to, like, hear Linda in that list is, like, it, like, jerks you out, like, when people awaken from a coma from having, like, the defibrillator slammed on their chest. Like, oh, like, Linda! Like, what the hell? And then, of course, Mungo is the brother of Pansy, Ponto, Largo, Lily, and that is Bilbo's grandfather, Mungo. Bilbo and Otho are the offspring of Mungo Baggins. Then there's Laura Baggins, who's the wife of Mungo. Again, a very normal name, Laura. Now, here's another question. Here, I'm opening a can of worms here, but this is my question.
Mm-hmm.
As we all know, that's not even really their names, because Baggins is a translation in English of the Westron name, Libingi. So her name isn't even...
Which, again, sorry to interrupt, is a thing that, like, Tolkien made himself.
Right.
That,
like, he's like, I regret to inform you this wasn't even written in English.
He did not have to be like, oh, by the way, these aren't their real names.
This
these
is
are
hell
just
of
the
your
translations of their names.
You've done, like, this to yourself.
And it's like, you did that. No, literally no one made you do that. No one was beating their head against the wall.
Because Frodo's name is Mora Libingi. So if her name's Laura... Is that actually, okay, does that mean that those words rhyme, but not really? Because in Westron, it's not really Laura. In English, it's Laura. But in Westron, it's Lyra or something. Do you know what I'm saying? I feel like I'm coming too close here to the flat edge of the earth that is the understanding of Middle Earth. Because why do those names sound so similar and rhyme, but not really? Why is that name so normal, but not really? Do you know what I'm saying?
I think it's just because Tolkien was Tolkien, man.
I know. Because now it also says Libingi was believed to be related to the Westron word Laban, which means bag. So bag end.
Bag, okay.
Baggins, Libingi.
Again, this is all stuff that he did not have to create.
Certainly no. But just such an interesting, you start to think about it and you can't stop thinking about it because... Again, some names on this family tree are really quite interesting, such as Linda. We also have Linda married Bodo, who had a son named Otto, who had a son named Olo, who had a son named Sancho. Okay. Sure.
Sancho. Isn't that the name of the like funny sidekick character in Man of La Mancha?
Man of Mancha, Sancho Panza. So here we go. We got a Sancho Panza on here. Also, one of the many brothers? Yes. I've honestly lost track now. An uncle to Bilbo would be Bingo, fantastic, who married Chica Chubb, who had a son named Falco Chubb Baggins, who had a daughter named Poppy. Do you know what I'm
saying? These are great. Oh, these
They're
are all
just
great.
Such fun names.
I love how the boy names are all like Bingo, Bungo, Hot Tot, whatever.
Yes.
And then the girl names are like Lily, Poppy,
Laura,
Nancy.
Linda.
Like very normal, beautiful names.
Yes, I actually see a Daisy on here who would be a cousin to Frodo. Not a second cousin, but like an actual in the same line of a family tree. One.
Okay, so Bilbo and Frodo are second cousins. So that means that their parents are cousins.
Their parents are cousins because Frodo is the child of Drogo Baggins and Primula Brandybuck.
Mm-hmm.
But Bilbo, how is Bilbo related to them? I've lost it.
I think could be making this up, but I think Bilbo is cousins with
Primula.
Wait, no. Bilbo, no. If they were second cousins, that would mean Bilbo's parents were cousins with either, you know, Frodo's mother or father.
Yes.
Because
I know it's in here somewhere. I took
because
so many
if it
notes.
Was if it was just that if it was Bilbo if Bilbo were cousins with either Frodo's mother or father, that would make them first cousins once removed.
Yes. The third generation includes Bilbo's father, aunts, and uncles. Thus, Bilbo is in the fourth generation of Bagginses. And oh no.
First cousins is when me and my cousin, we both have kids, and those
children are cousins.
First cousins. And then when those cousins have children, their children are second cousins. So that's what Frodo and Bilbo are.
Yes. Yes. Second cousins.
God, yes. This is insane.
Yes.
And also, this is for first cousins.
First cousin on his mother's side, while Frodo's father, Drogo, was Bilbo's second cousin on his father's side.
Okay,
so they all be cousins in so many ways.
Yeah, they're all kind of because Frodo and Pippin are cousins too, right?
Correct.
They're like somehow related as well.
Okay, this actually means that Frodo is his first and second cousin once removed on both sides. That's the final answer.
So, okay. So I think we've answered our question of like, why does Gandalf say Uncle Bilbo?
Yes. He's like, shut up. I'm calling him your uncle, you loser. Yes. So, and also another thing that I bet you somebody who knows more about this than I do actually has an answer to this. So if you do, go for it. Let me know. A lot of the other research that I did said that the Baggins family was always known as sort of a well-to-do family, both mm-hmm. financially and in respectability. And that while Bilbo came home much richer, he's the one who sort of destroyed the family lineage in terms of like the respectability politics. Like he was like the cuckoo one who like went.
Yeah, that makes sense. You go on one quest with dwarves and
yeah, suddenly a reputation. Man. But I had always understood, or at least I think this was my initial that I sort of like put as canon in my brain, understanding that when he came home with a hoard full of gold and such, he made the family rich. So he came back home a rich bachelor. That's what I always thought. But it sounds like they always kind of had a lot of money. He just came home with super money. I'm sure that
the Baggins were always maybe it's the difference between like old money and new money. West egg, East egg.
And he's both, and much like how he's his first and second cousin, he's both old money and new money.
And yeah.
New money is when a dragon gives you his money.
New money is when you go off with a wizard and come back exactly. with trauma and a chest full of gold. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
I think that all makes sense. Thank you for this intense investigative reporting. Sarah Koenig.
Sarah Koenig reporting for duty.
Yeah, and it's so interesting to me. Maybe not interesting is the good word for it here, but I just find it interesting. It speaks to me. It stands out that like for almost every character Tolkien is like, well, I have to make a family tree. I have to go back, you know, generations and generations and generations. And I have to make sure that people know that Bilbo's great, 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 great grandfather was Bingo. Like,
yes, I must let them know.
Like, if they don't know, this entire story will fall apart.
I want to throw a big up to Tolkien. I want to give him a big thanks because, and I may have mentioned this on this podcast before. I apologize if I have, but I wrote a book and ideally this book will be out next year. But when I was writing this book, I had sort of the fringes of an idea, but there was a thing I couldn't crack, which is that there needed to be two characters who were related and very close to each other, but they could not be brother and sister for mm-hmm. reasons too complicated for me to expound on right now. And it was during the dead of the pandemic. It was like, I don't know, June of 2020. Mm. And this is when all you did was sit at home and watch movies because you had just no idea what was going on. And a friend who lived in the same building, so we were sort of like part of a pandemic pod, had never seen any of the Lord of the Rings movies. And so we like went downstairs one night to watch the movie. And of course, you are introduced to a lot of hobbits all at once. And he very innocently was like, are they friends or are they related? And I was like, oh, Merry and Pippin, they're cousins, but they're also Frodo's cousins. Everyone's cousins. And then in my brain, I went, everyone's cousins? And then it clicked and I went back upstairs and I started writing the book and the book is now done. Because I was like, they're cousins.
Everyone's cousins by Allie Gordon. Truly. You can buy it at Barnes & Noble coming May 2024. Cousins.
Yes, exactly. But truly, thank you to J.R.R. Tolkien.
To Tolkien.
I have multiple times.
You can just say Jurt.
Thank you to Jurt for establishing the well-known literary rule. Everyone's
cousins.
And I was like, oh my God, everybody be cousins. That's it. It totally fixed it for me.
Yeah.
Thanks.
That will segue nicely into our next topic where everyone is cousins, but it's a little worrying because they're married.
Everyone cousins? Question mark.
So Allie was like, oh, I'd love to talk about maybe going to like genealogies and blah. And I was like, well, probably like the best genealogy to go into, like there was like one from every like, you know, representation of peoples that we could get into if we wanted to. But probably the best one to talk about would be Aragorn's.
Oh, for sure. One of the longest names in literary history, I assume.
Yes, yes. And he is like extremely distant cousins with Arwen. And I'm not sure most people know that.
Maybe they've redacted and also the
like it's a weird thing because like he is also low-key Arwen's like foster brother. Like it's
yeah. Now see, that's the part that I feel I actually have made fun of on this podcast before, though. It's a little bit like in the movie, like remember in Swan Princess, did you ever watch that when you were growing up?
I have no clue what that is.
Oh my god, maybe it was not a Disney movie, but it was sort of in the same VHS pile as the rest of my Disney movies. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Okay, no, I was gonna say it sounded like one of those animated Barbie movies.
Correct, it was like that, but it was very high budget though. It had some good music, but there was a whole plot in the beginning about how when this prince and this princess were growing up together, they were like, him, he's yucky. And then of course they grew up and they're like, oh, just kidding, I don't know why I was saying that, I actually don't feel that way at all anymore. I feel like it was like that, that she was like, ew, a man, disgusting, and then suddenly was like, oh well, actually I changed my mind.
So the difference is that so people, we can explain away the cousins thing. Being like, well, they're like, Aragorn is Arwen's first cousin 5 billion times removed.
Yes, very, very far removed. Very far removed. And if it wasn't for Tolkien fucking telling on himself and insisting on putting this family trees in, we'd never know this.
Exactly. So like we can explain that away that way. And then we can explain away the like foster brother, foster sister situation away, because Arwen was not really around in Aragorn's childhood, and she didn't meet him until he was in his 20s, which is a baby for elves.
Correct.
And also because he is one of the Dúnedain, that's still that's like a teenager, and they first meet and Aragorn like immediately falls in love with her and is like, hi, I'm in love with you, will you marry me? And she's like, you are a child. I'm flattered, but no. And then it's like not until I think like a while later that she's like, okay, yeah, I'll consider this. So we can at least explain that away, that it's not like it wasn't like cradle robbing or anything.
Yes, although in all of this, something that I think was, you know, like when people will complain about the subtleties that get lost between the books and the movies. Mm-hmm. I think one of the best subtleties that we chose to lose was just like all of the fiddle-dee-dee with just how complicated ages are. For example, like Frodo being like, I'm 50. And it's like, no, you're not. Shut up. Do you know what I'm saying? Like they just sort of like let that not be a thing. And it's like, thank you. Actually, I'm sure like there's some nerd out there who's mad, but okay. And the closest we kind of get to
touching on that is in a deleted scene when Eowyn is talking to Aragorn and is like, you fought with my grandfather. You must be like 60 years old. And he's like, I'm 87. And
she's like,
you know,
not too old for me, actually. I love older men. Historically, I've actually always been really into older men.
Well, yeah, I'm into, and then, you know, obviously Viggo Mortensen is like in his, you know, 30s or 40s or whatever at that point. So, definitely like the ages are, it's definitely weird. But so, okay, so Arwen's father, Elrond, married Galadriel's, sorry, I'm already getting myself confused.
See,
married
I did Galadriel's. So much research, and the minute I started talking, I was like, hold on.
So Elrond is Arwen's father. Elrond married Galadriel's daughter. So Galadriel is, you know, Arwen's grandmother. So Elrond also had a twin brother named Elros. And way back in the Silmarillion days, So Elrond and Elros's, this is when another instance of like going down the Tolkien rabbit hole of like, you can't answer a simple question without being like, okay, so going back to the first age, right. And here's what, you know, going back thousands of years.
Just opening a can of worms.
Exactly. Their parents basically low-key abandoned them to like go save everything, but Elrond and Elros are kind of like left behind. And eventually they get to some kind of resolution with this conflict that's been going on, where Elrond and Elros have been presented with this option where they can choose to remain an elf, kind of like basically what Beren and Luthien was presented with, which is like, you can remain an elf or you can know mortality, essentially, and you can, you know, eventually die. And Elrond remained an elf, and Elros, his brother, chose mortality, and he went on to create and like found and lead Numenor, which is like the man.
Yeah,
I say man in this, like the people, not the gender, the man island.
The man island.
That
the
has Isle this, of like,
man, as they say.
Terrible disaster. It sinks. And like, and Elros's lineage goes all the way down eventually to, after like generations of prosperity in Numenor, gets to Elendil. And eventually, so Elendil has two sons, Isildur and Anarion. Isildur, we all probably recognize. And Isildur, his lineage goes directly down to Aragorn.
As we know, because he does not stop talking about it.
Yes. So frequently that is mentioned. How... roughly Arwen and Aragorn are actually related.
Yes. Which is truly like 5,000 years of difference.
Yes. But yeah. Yes. So like it's so minuscule, but Arwen's father and Aragorn's like great times 500 grandfather are brothers.
Are brothers. But an immortal and immortal version of them.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. And the reason
that really,
there's
actually,
that.
Actually, that is a thing that I never quite understood. And you just sort of demystified that for me.
I'm sure there's so much more nuance to it than I am explaining.
I don't think my brain could handle it. So thank you for explaining it to me.
I don't remember it.
I like this sort of version of like that Reddit thing of like, explain it to me like I'm five.
Yeah.
I'm like, explain it to me like I'm five. How are they related?
Yeah. These episodes are essentially explain it to me like I'm drunk.
Yeah. Fantastic. Speaking of things that sort of horrified me as a drunk person, and sure. Again, I have read the books, but there are so many things that happen, and so much happens so quickly, and it's all written in quite poetic language that you sometimes forget the things that happened. Lotho was stabbed by Grima Wormtongue. We know this.
Yes.
Apparently, he was also maybe eaten.
Yeah.
So that was a bit of new information.
Yeah, it's insane.
That was a bit of new information for me. I didn't really know how to make that sort of go into my brain.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some weird things in the Tolkien legendarium that you're like, what just happened?
I was like, I don't think I remember that happening in the book, but maybe it did, and I was just sort of excited for them to be home. I think it's gonna take me about 20 years to process that.
I mean, in all honesty, that's such an insane chapter because it's maybe that's something like I could cover on these episodes because it's not in the movies. So a lot of people don't know about this, you know, like revolution that happens in the Shire.
And that's such, it like, really is a very fun, unexpected part of the book.
It's because, so like, insane. It's so insane because
you
like,
really think like the hero's journey, you come home and everything's okay. And it's like, such a shock to be like, okay, first of all, things are not okay. Second of all, your other second cousin just got eaten,
that like, oh, this thing that we've been away dealing with, like, it affected home. Like, that's a very realistic thing. And like going into like Tolkien's, you know, history with the war of being like, the war wasn't just happening, you know, when he was away in France or anything, you know. He, you know, would come home and there's still the, you know, domino of the ripple effect of it affecting everyone. And the reality, like coming to terms with that of like, no, this affected everything. And like, the Shire wasn't safe just because it was the Shire.
Far away. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe that's a fun note.
That's an insane. Yeah, that's an insane chapter. Yeah. I just remember being absolutely shocked because Saruman gets his throat cut. It's brutal, yo.
But that's the fun part.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's really is so good. I will talk about that anytime. But yeah, that was definitely a little detail that somehow managed to.
Yeah, these like small details that evade. You don't pick up on or you don't understand, and you're like, that's kind of insane. Yeah.
Also, just because like, especially like in the movie, you're like, that's a little freaky little guy, and then mm-hmm. you're like, in the book, you're like, are you well? Are you human? What are you? Beast or human? What be you? Do you know what I mean? It's like it's mm-hmm. a whole other level of freak.
Because. I think like also that kind of can get into, I guess it was the opening of Return of the King when it shows like the flashback of like what Gollum or Sméagol or whoever used to be. And it's like, oh, this was a person at some point, you know? And like, how did it get to this point? Anyway.
Yeah.
Let's see. Yeah. So Elendil is this long descendant of Elros who founded Numenor. They get the fuck out of there when things are going south. They get to Middle Earth. He has two sons. He doesn't have two sons there, but they come with him, Isildur and Anarion. And eventually they have this huge battle. Elendil dies. Sauron's defeated the first time and Isildur gets the ring. Elendil, their father, was reigning over the kingdom of Arnor, which is called the Northern Kingdom, which is very deceiving because it's actually kind of like the Northwest. It's like on if you're looking at a map of Middle Earth and there's like the line of the mountains, it's on the left side.
Cool.
So it's like kind of,
it feels like when people argue about the geography of Los Angeles, like it's not on the north, it's not even north, it's like Northwest.
Yeah. Everyone has those of like, okay, but that's not actually, you know, like we have
like, north, so north side, south side.
And it's like, well, actually north. That's more like south. That's more southeast than actually south or, you know, whatever. And it's like, no, it doesn't matter. Yeah. And so when Elendil dies, Isildur, the oldest son, becomes king of like this whole kingdom, whereas Anarion becomes the king of Minas Anor, which then becomes Minas Tirith and is like Gondor proper. And so Anarion's line eventually, it's like the kings of Gondor, and then eventually there's this huge thing where the last official king of Gondor dies and he has no I think he did have children, but they like died in this battle. Mm-hmm. And then like it jumps back to, they're like, okay, well, we'll give reign to this, like someone's like nephew
someone's
or uncle or
cousin twice.
Yeah. And then like from sides. There, it kind of devolves. And then eventually there's like no official kingship bloodline in Minas Tirith anymore. And then that's like when the stewards take mm-hmm. over. And then meanwhile, Isildur's side of the family is over in like the western part of Middle Earth. I'm doing so much gesturing.
This is great. I'm riveted.
and things are going to shit over there too, because the Witch King, they start forging this battle with the Witch King, and he kind of like takes down, they had like kind of divided this area of the land into like three different kingdoms, and one of them eventually becomes Angband. No, not Angband. That's a different thing. Wait, no.
It's fun to think of the Witch King doing geographical.
Angmar. That's what I was thinking of.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's fun to think of him sitting down at a table and having a meeting with people.
Being like, okay, fine. With like maps and being like, we should attack from the left. And
yeah, he's like, no, I want to be west of the 101. They're like, well, you can't have the entirety of the 101. It's,
yeah.
Yeah. I like that.
The fact that I remember, I'll like link in the episode description if you want like the exact details and like understanding what I'm talking about, you know, specifically, but this like intense battle that they have where this region that Isildur's line was controlling and then they lost control over to the Witch King that becomes Angmar, this area, all these people die in battle, and then the Witch King like sends this curse to where they are buried, and they become the Barrow-wights that the hobbits encounter after they leave Tom Bombadil's house. And furthermore, in this original battle where like all these people died, their weapons had been made specifically to fight these like forces of Sauron's, these dark beings and the Witch King, their weapons had been specifically fortified for that. And those are the same weapons that when they're rescued by Tom Bombadil from the Barrow-wights, he gives them these like swords that are hanging around in these tombs. And then flash forward to the Battle of Pelennor Fields, Merry stabs the Witch King with one of those swords that was originally created. And that's created. Why it's
so effective.
Yes.
Wow. So in some ways, everybody be cousins.
Yes. Yeah.
This is, they're all sort of related in a way.
Everything's connected. Everything. Yeah. It's insane. Kind of like disaster happens on Isildur. I mean, disaster is happening on like both sides of Elendil's like sons and like their lineages, where like in Gondor, there's like plague and battles and like everyone dies off and there's no like official king anymore. And then they just have the stewards. And then on Isildur's line, they kind of like diminish in power. Eventually the like land that they have power, that they like reign over, kind of like stops being a thing and they lose power. And so that's why Aragorn is kind of like, that's how he goes from like Isildur was this king of this entire region,
right,
to down to Aragorn, where he's like living in obscurity and he is skulking in the shadows of the Prancing Pony with his hood up, looking of real course. Hot, you know?
Yes. Manifesting.
Yes. And furthermore, so I saw, this will be like so old by the time this episode comes out, but I saw a TikTok clip of that podcast that all of the late night show hosts have been doing, the Jimmys and Stephen Colbert and Seth Meyers. And someone submitted a Lord of the Rings question for Stephen to answer. I say Stephen, like he's my friend.
Yeah, our friend Steve. We know Steve.
And for those that don't know, Stephen Colbert is like an insane, he's not just a Lord of the Rings fan. Like, I would wager that like if he could choose like a different, like if he went back in time, that like he would be like an official Tolkien scholar. 100%.
He'd be running this podcast, you know, instead of you.
Yeah. Stephen, if you're listening, as always, there's an open invitation for you to come
on. Please, come on over.
Someone sent in this question and it was a very funny bit where he was like, these guys don't want to hear, this is going to be just like back in high school of like the bullies making fun of me because I like Lord of the Rings. And it's a very funny bit where he starts answering the question in detail and then everyone slowly one by one walks away and then they like fade his sound out. Yeah, it's very funny. Anyway, but the question was, why is it if like, if Aragorn's, if Isildur's lineage remains active all the way down to Aragorn, why did none of them try and go to Gondor to claim the throne? Like, why did it happen? Why did it wait until it was Aragorn? Why was it that long for someone to go back and claim the throne? The last official king of Gondor, it was like Orad here or something like that. Hang on, let me look up the official name. The last official king of Gondor dies in a battle, and someone from Isildur's line marries his daughter and tries to come to Gondor to take the, and is like, hey, I'm from Isildur's line, I'm married to the daughter of the previous king, like, let me, to like, this seems like a pretty clear route to take the throne back. And they were like, no, we don't want,
they were
you
like
here.
No, okay.
Yeah. So essentially, the answer boils down to, they were not, the people of Gondor were not ready.
Yeah. We're not having it.
They wouldn't have accepted a king to come. And so it was just that, like, the timing had to be right for Aragorn to come back, for a king to come back. And it just happened that the timing worked out with Aragorn.
Okay. So, I like that. That's a good answer. I accept that answer.
Yeah. So that's Aragorn's lineage. It's very ridiculous and insane, and everyone is cousins.
Everyone be cousins. So congratulations.
Yeah. Allie, thank you for joining me. What have we learned today?
You know what I'm going to say. Everyone be cousins.
Everyone be cousins.
And sometimes you might not even know it because it took 5,000 years for you to get there, but you still be cousins somewhere back there.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Where can the good people find you on the internet? What are you doing? What are you up to? What's this book that you've written where everyone is cousins?
Everyone be cousins. I have a book that's coming out. I don't know how much I'm like allowed to say because I'm just finishing. I just sent back my second round of edits, which means we're like getting into the place where we are going to start doing like advanced reader copies and stuff. So like it's all on the horizon, but I like can't really say anything yet. So, oh well. And of course, everybody be cousins. You can find me on Twitter X, I don't know what it's called anymore, and Instagram at Miss Alice Nutting, MSALICENUTTING. Also, if you live in Chicago or around Chicago, and this is coming out in November, I will be spending my month of November there because I'm actually doing a Star Kid show I wish I had looked up the dates. They're going to kill me. Like the 15th to the 20th or something like that. It's a Christmas show and it'll be very fun.
Oh my
fun.
God. Is this in the universe of the Black Friday musical?
No,
the
Hatchetfield stuff? Or Christmas Carol. Different? It's the 80s Christmas Carol. It's called VHS Christmas Carol. And now it's called VHS Christmas Carols because we're actually adding a whole new act one with like two brand new stories. And the music really do slap. The music is so fun.
Oh, it's so fun.
So if you
that's
want
great.
Some lighthearted Christmas entertainment, we will be in Chicago. So come.
Oh, it's so great. I low-key want to go to Chicago specifically for that. But actually, I'm having surgery at the beginning of November and I can't fly for 6 weeks after
that.
Don't do that then.
That's but a no next for me. Time.
That sounds yes. so fun.
We've
yeah.
been joking that we're going to do this Christmas Carol show every year until we die. And I actually am starting to believe it's true because it's been about 4 years in a row now. And now it's gotten even longer. Now the show is twice as long as it once was. So I look forward to the year being 2058 and the show being 1998. Hours long and we'll all be 80. It'll be great. It's fantastic.
Oh, that's excellent. That's it for me. Until next time, go water your plants. This might be coming out the week of election day. It might even be coming out on election day. So in that case,
it's your civil duty.
Go vote. If you are specifically in Richmond, Virginia, vote no to the casino. That's a very specific thing that Richmond people will understand, and I hope it's coming out in time because we already voted for this thing 2 years ago and we said no, and they brought it back and we were like, we don't want a casino. So casino, and that's it. All right.